You get it.
Welcome back to A Fine Time for Healing, a place for your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And well, I have such a great show for you today. If you have been a target of an emotional predator, a narcissist, a psychopath, something like that, perk your ears up. Because today's special guest, Stephen Wollhandler, JD, MA, LPC, is an attorney and psychotherapist with decades of experience in dispute resolution and psychology. He's the author of Protecting Yourself from Emotional Predators, Neutralize the Users, Abusers, and Manipulators Hidden Among Us, which presents a new paradigm for understanding toxic people and relationships. An attorney since 1984, Stephen is a graduate of Cornell Law School, where he was an editor of the Law Review. He has practiced law in a large Wall Street law firm and as soloist in a small New Mexican town. there's so much, I don't want to go into the whole thing, but Stephen has been resolving business and family disputes outside the courts since 1993 as a mediator, arbitrator, consultant, custody evaluator, and parental decision maker. He combines his legal training and expertise with his deep understanding of psychological basis of high conflict disputes. And I can only tell you that we just talked for 15 minutes before we started to record, and oh, wow. So here we go. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you, Randy. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
It's really a pleasure to have you. Stephen was on January 7th of 2020, and we talked about this, but you know, in that time, he's doing different things, I'm doing different things. So we're really, we have a lot to share. Okay, so tell us what kind of work you do. What is your specialty?
Well, I do a lot of different things. I mediate disputes, I arbitrate disputes. A lot of my work is in the family courts, but some of it's in commercial disputes. Sometimes I work with small family businesses or even medium-sized family businesses. So I do a lot of dispute resolution. I also do a lot of consulting with people who are dealing with what I call emotional predators. And I do that with people pretty much all over the English-speaking world. Anyone in the English-speaking world with an internet connection, people from that wide range, they contact me for that. And I used to do a lot of custody evaluations. I'm in Colorado, and those are here. The ones I did are called parental responsibilities evaluations, or PREs. There's another type of custody evaluation in Colorado that's I would call a shorter, less expensive, called a child and family investigation. I did not do those. I haven't done those for years. I recently stopped doing those custody evaluations. It became a little too wearing on me, and I may resume that. But a lot of consulting these days, working with parents who are dealing with, or you know, family members.
Is there any way for you to turn your level of sound up?
Sure.
I've got mine all the way up, and it's a little
Okay, hold on.
Okay, well, while you're doing that, so now the PRE is particular to Colorado, and I'm familiar with that. And there are many different officers of the court and evaluators and people that do these kind of things. So when you do consultant work, you say you do it with anybody who speaks English, right? So that would be anywhere.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if someone is dealing with a very unfair situation, let's call it a predatory spouse, you would work with them and help them to get the best outcome possible?
Yes. By the way, is that a little better volume for the microphone?
A little bit better.
I can make it louder.
Make it louder.
How's that? Is that
That's
any better?
good. There you go.
Okay. Well, technology is wonderful when it works for us, and then if it lets us down a little bit, we get very impatient.
It's good.
Okay. Okay, good. The question was,
So
what
what
do
I
I
was saying is, so if somebody is coming to you as a consultant, you're going to help them get the very best possible outcome from
Yes.
their custody case, right?
Yes. One of the things that I work with parents about is how to organize their whatever material or documents or evidence or points, the main points they want to make to, if it's a custody evaluation or in the courts. And I work with attorneys. I work with attorneys to help them do this. Often, and how to, on a personal side, not be provoked, not all of the natural responses of a good, decent person when they're targeted by an emotional predator. The natural responses can betray us, and it's very helpful to people to help them to become emotionally less easily provoked, let's put it that way. And I help them sometimes to understand what's happening in the dynamics between their predator and them. And that helps them to understand it in a whole new light. And that, okay, I get it. When he or she does whatever they do that pushes my buttons, oh, I see. So their buttons are less sensitive. And that helps them tremendously. So there's a number of different ways. And also, if it's a custody evaluation situation, to be able to help them understand these are the things that the law, that the judge has to, the factors in the statute that the judge has to address this is what they're going to have to look at. And a lawyer also will go over, a good lawyer will go over all this with a person, but sometimes they don't. And I say, so if you're talking to an evaluator, the evaluator is going to be thinking about these factors. So you have lots of information, but which of the things that that you have for 10 years of information, which ones address the things that the evaluator and the court needs to think about? That's helping to organize and focus on what really, yeah. It's different from what their therapist might ask. They might want to talk about with their therapist. That's a much wider range.
And I know that I advise people if they're going to have a guardian ad litem visit them or a parent coordinator or PRE or something like that, do not bash your spouse. Do not say, but you don't understand. It's like they think it's the first time they're going to tell this, but you don't understand what he or she's been doing to me. I'm like, don't do that. You're going to look so bad. Why does that look so bad?
Well, because the evaluate well, first of all, because that's almost undoubtedly what the predator is going to be doing to them, going to be saying about them, first of all. And then the evaluator or the guardian ad litem or whoever it is, and in Colorado we have child legal representatives, whatever it is, they're going to be sitting there listening to one parent saying, the other parent is terrible and all is horrible, blah, blah, blah. And then they hear the other parent going, the other parent is terrible. And they're going to go, oh, well, it sounds like they're both. And then they will interpret they'll understand the conflict as, well, these two parents are just angry at each other. But that's not what's really going on. And, a predator's accusations, before we got on the air, you said the brilliant thing that you said, I wrote it down, accusations are confessions, because we were talking about how one of the ways to help a person calm their emotional reactivity. And I say to people when I'm counseling them, do not react emotionally. Learn to respond strategically, but not react emotionally. And it's along the same lines. You understand that the stuff that the other person is throwing at you and accusing you of and telling the evaluator or the guardian ad litem these horrible things about you have to understand these are confessions, as you put it, or projections of their own. So that happens a lot.
And sometimes the targeted parent will be the one to bash it, and the other parent, the predatory parent, the emotional predatory parent, can be very calm.
That's true also.
And so the contrast is like, oh, well, who's the crazy one here? Well, you know?
The other thing I counsel parents to do is they want to say things like, my ex is a raging narcissist, or my ex is a borderline personality disorder, blah, blah, you know, they're a psychopath. I counsel, let the expert figure that out. Just provide the facts. Right. Just they, well, here's, they did this, and here's the audio or the video or whatever I've got. Here's the emails or whatever, the text messages. This is what they did. That's it. Let the expert be the expert. You may know more about your spouse or your soon to be ex-spouse or your ex-spouse. You know more, but it doesn't serve you. In fact, sometimes it insults the ego of the, I'll put it in air quotes, the expert.
They just the judge. Don't you tell, you?
You know, don't you tell me that they're a narcissist. I'll figure that out. Mm-hmm. So it's much less is more in that way.
Right. I always say people tell people not to label them, give them diagnosis. It just waters you down. It's not good. It's going to, everybody, your professionals are going to tune you right out.
So that's true.
What you're saying is absolutely it. Talk about facts. Talk about what's happening. Do not label.
Yeah, I also advise people in there. And one of the things when I'm consulting with people is sometimes they'll, in the middle of this process, they'll be getting communications, our family wizard, messaging back and forth. And I'll ask them to, well, before you write back, let me see it. And then I'll help teach them about editing out adjectives, superlatives, always, never, you know, outrageously, all of the LY words, and the characterizing, and just state the thing. He said this.
Mm-hmm. We say words or less.
Yes, less is more.
Right, right. Often. Just say what you have to say and cut out the anything else. Oh, we're so on the same page here. You know, and you have a lot more experience directly in this work. So, what do you? How do? You, what is an emotional predator?
Oh boy. Well, emotional predators are known by many different labels these days. I would just say an emotional predator is a person who lacks empathy, and I define empathy as, that's a whole like little tangent there. I'll just say they lack empathy. We can talk about what I mean by empathy, okay. Which means without empathy, they have no conscience. And they have no compassion. Now, they can fake these things. They can fake these things, but they actually don't have empathy. Their empathy circuit is just not hooked up. So a person who lacks empathy and is driven, I would say they are relentlessly and insatiably driven to experience dominating, controlling, winning, bullying. These are all words for the similar kind of thing. So they're relentlessly and insatiable. It cannot be satisfied, this drive. They feel they bully somebody, they got to keep doing it and keep doing it. So they're relentlessly and insatiably driven to have that experience. And the way that they effectively do that you can control or feel like you're dominating someone is to elicit an emotional reaction out of them. So if one of these people comes at me and they say, and they start attacking me because I wear green socks, I don't care about green socks. I have no emotional reaction to that. It just goes, you know, it doesn't affect me.
Yeah, I am wearing green socks. Yes, I am.
Yeah, they're going to try. They're very sensitive, not empathy, but they're sensitive. And they have a sixth, even a seventh sense of being able to pick up on what the target values most, what I call them, your core values, your core beliefs, the things that are most important to you. And in parent situations, it's pretty obviously the children. Right. So they know what they know, or they find out what that is. And they go, oh, Stephen doesn't care about green socks. but he does care about blue underwear. So I'm going to go after him about the blue underwear thing and go on and on. And I'll be like, ah, because I really care about that. It's very important to me. That's a stupid example, but so that's why I call them emotional predators. And a predator, I mean, I put in the book, I could read you the definition of what a predator is. You know, they use other people for their, they feed on other people mm-hmm. to gratify this insatiable need to feel that they're dominant, they're controlling, they're winning, they're pushing other people around. I used to say puppet master with the strings, you know, they jerk your string and how high can they get you to jump, that kind of thing. So they prey on your emotions. Again, that's part of when you counsel people, I try to get them to understand. And I talk about this in my book that, you know, one of the second step to protecting yourself out of the five steps is you have to know yourself. You have to know yourself really better than they do. You have to know, what do I value? What are my emotional triggers or the buttons that they can push? And that helps you to go, okay, I can neutralize them. I see that even if it's very important to me, my children are very important to me. Obviously, I don't have to make them not important to me, but I know that when he's busy poking and doing nasty stuff to my kids, I understand what's happening here. He's trying to get a reaction out of me. And I understand that I disengage from that whole dynamic. Anyway, does that explain to you what
yes,
I think a predator is?
Yeah, and you know, and the difference between a emotional predator that is human, because I'm not so sure they are, human and an animal, a predator in the animal kingdom, is that they are, when they kill, when they attack, they do it quick and humanely. Kill it, and they only kill, they only eat what they need. They eat when they're hungry. The narcissist, the psychopath, they kill slowly and torturously, and they need to feed all the time. So I say narcissists are probably the most dangerous creatures walking this earth.
They're
very dangerous.
Well, I agree, except for, I mean, my framework for understanding this is slightly different from most people's, in that I consider these people are emotional predators, and an emotional predator is a mixture of five different personality disordered features.
Okay.
And they're all narcissistic because it's always all about them all the time. Mm-hmm. And some of them are more sociopathic, because those people are much more sort of scheming types.
Mm-hmm.
They're all paranoid to some extent. They're all paranoid to some extent because they're busy manipulating other people to get what they want. So they assume everybody's trying to do it to them, which makes them all slightly paranoid, mm-hmm. some more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them are more hysterical, or in the DSM, they call histrionic. They're more hysterical. These are the people, the drama queens and the drama kings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a 5-minute conversation needed to happen. And 3 hours later, or 3 days later, and this is I'm going to get you to, you know, chase your tail. And if I can get you to chase your tail, oh, look how powerful I am. Oh, so they have, some of them have a lot of that characteristic, and some of them are borderline characters. They have more of that feature, which is to be consistently inconsistent. I mean, I say the one thing you can count on with a borderline type person is you can't count on anything. They'll say it has to be X. And then 3 minutes later, they'll go, it can never be X. And you go, well, then you understand what you're dealing with.
It's really, I find that people who come to me who have been abused by a borderline or been in a relationship with a borderline, they're so much worse than people who have been abused by narcissists, because with a borderline, there is a level of truth to their love or their affection.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, so they see that, and then as soon as they see it, it's taken away.
Mm-hmm,
the narcissist, mm-hmm. right? With the narcissist, it's never really there. It's all fake, you know?
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
they feel it. It's like, but this person is so warm and loving when they are. And then, yank, they take it right away. And I don't know who they are. And it's a tough one to deal with. Yeah. This is also very true.
That has characteristics of what is commonly understood as the cycle of abuse. You know, we don't have to go, I mean, we can go into if you want, but you know, that it's very well diagrammed and understood. The honeymoon phase, the love bombing, then the building of tension, then the release of tension with usually a physical assault, but sometimes it's just an explosive verbal assault. Right. And then the remorse, expressions of remorse, and there it is.
And then
back
and
to
the
honeymoon.
Intermittent reinforcement and all the stuff where they suck them back in, and the person goes, oh, everything I've pleaded, everything I've said, finally they get it, right?
Right.
And they get thrown and they get sucked back
in.
Oh
my gosh. This is something that I work with people about. If you've been targeted by these predators, you know, you have to, step two of protecting yourself, I mentioned this, is you have to know yourself, and you have to know what are your hopes and desires, and, you know, and how do you delude yourself about who that person really is, and who they are is different almost always from who you want them to be.
Yes.
And who you may have devoted 10 years trying to get them, or 15 years trying to get them to be. And that's a very hard thing for people.
It is a very hard thing. You know, you mentioned a point before, and, you know, about knowing yourself and knowing what your values are. And, you know, a lot of times, and I think women are more emotional than men, but I'm not ruling men out in this situation. But when they're trying to get their husband to understand them, or they say, you know, I want a divorce, and they'll say, just please, please, please leave the kids alone. Please. When you say that, parental alienation, right, exactly. You never want to say that, because you're giving them intel into what hurts you.
Absolutely. Another thing I speak about in the book is there's a whole section, a little number of pages on controlling the information. They're expert at controlling the information that the false information they're putting out, and the information they're busy gathering about you, about the target, that they can use to manipulate you and abuse you. And I to put it kind of simplistically, this is part of not being provoked. The first level of not being provoked is never show any emotional reaction at all. Respond strategically, don't react emotionally. But you don't, when you reveal what's important to you, well, like he just said, that's so normal. That's what all decent people do, because they misunderstand the nature of the other person. You said they're not really human. I would say they're not fully developed humans.
Their brains are not.
They're not fully developed humans, in my opinion, because a fully developed human has a very active and well-functioning empathy, but they don't have that. So they're not fully, you know, they don't have everything. Anyway, but when you tell them, the target will assume naively, and this is something that we have to educate people, that the other person is more or less like them, but they're not. They're completely different. They don't have the same values. They don't operate the same way. They don't have the same beliefs. They don't, nothing about, they're alien. They're completely alien to everything that the target knows is a normal, decent person. And so when you say, when that parent says, oh, it's okay, but please just don't involve the children. Oh, it's the most normal thing to do. And it's just the most counterproductive thing to do, because the predator just goes, screw around with the children, that'll get her. And that's what happened. You just told them what to do. So I actually talk in the book, and I consult with people sometimes about, this is a page out of Sun Tzu, The Art of War. It's adapted from that. But I tell people to appear strong. He says appear strong where you're weak and appear weak where you are strong. So your enemy attacks you where you're actually strong because they think you're weak there. Hmm. But I shift that around and say appear interested where you really couldn't care less and appear disinterested about the things that actually are important to you. So in an example, I say to people, it's a silly example, but I'll say, so, you know, you might start the communication with a long email or whatever you're sending saying, well, really, first thing we need to deal with, suppose you don't care about the money will be okay. You know, it's going to be fine one way or the other, more money, less money, but you really care about the kids. So what you want to do there is misdirect their attention. And you say, well, first of all, we need to deal with the money. And you go on for three paragraphs about the money. Then at the end, you start with that. You spend a lot of time on that. And then at the end, yeah, you maybe throw in a little, oh, and I don't know what, you know, whatever you think, maybe blah, blah, blah about the children. The predator goes, oh, you know, he really cares about the money or she really cares about the money. Mm-hmm. And that's where they'll expend their energy and try to, It's not that simple, and it's not perfect.
But it is simple because narcissists are not complicated, all right? When you understand what they're motivated by, you can take the power back very easily. But what people say to me, and the thing is, you know, narcissists target people who are nice, sweet, genuine, authentic people. They don't lie. There's no pretenses. And so, you know, when we tell them, you need to play the game, you've got to treat, you know, you've got to act differently. You have to act. You have to know what they do, know who you are, and you have to act. And they're like, but that's not real. That's not genuine. I'm like, this is survival. This is survival. It's your survival. You don't do it, you're going to lose.
It's your children's survival also. Right. Excuse me, I'm just going to let the whining dog out. I
Go
can
ahead,
hear you.
Sure, yeah.
It's just that, you know, who runs my life? Apparently the dog does. Come on.
Well, they run, yeah, pets run everybody's lives.
All right, sorry. Sorry for the interruption. A couple of things there. One of the things I advise people is learn, as part of learn to respond strategically, I say, learn how to play their game better than they do. And that does not make you them. That does not make you like them. And there's some fundamental differences. They do these deceptive or manipulative behaviors. They do them relentlessly across the boards in every aspect of their life with no regard for the consequences to on anybody else. You may adopt some of their strategies, like maybe misleading them with a communication that isn't really honest or something like I was talking about. You may adopt a strategy only with that one predator person, and you do it with always aware of what might be the collateral consequences for innocent other people. And it's very different, but it looks alike. And you got to be careful also with the evaluator types. You got to be very careful about how you do something like that so that you don't look like you don't be mistaken for them because you adopted one of their tactics. But it is useful to understand the games they play and to be able to outplay them at their own game.
Yeah.
Well, there was one other thing that you said, if I could just go down a little tangent that I think is really important for parents. I work with a lot of parents who are divorcing or divorced, and they have these a couple of children with this nightmare other person. And the parent is busy beating themselves up about how could I have not seen what a raging sociopath or a crazy borderline nutcase, what a horrible person the other parent is. And they beat themselves up because, oh my God, I've condemned my children to growing up with this nightmare parent. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen over many years, and I try to share this with parents all the time, is first of all, you touched right on it. These predators, they target decent, compassionate, kind, giving, generous, sensitive people. That's who they target. And if you've been targeted by one of these people, it probably means that you're an exceptionally wonderful person.
Exactly.
And people are like, oh my God, they feel so bad about themselves. I said, oh no. They don't target it, jerks. They target the best among us because those are the people that are naturally going to be giving to them, naturally going to be tolerant. Anyway, that's the first thing. The second thing is they beat themselves up about I've condemned my children to this horrible other parent. But actually, if you take a long-term perspective, it's often the case that your children, because they're growing up with a parent who's let's say, a raging narcissist, they may be better equipped as they enter adulthood than you were to see and recognize and keep away from narcissists because they go, oh, I was on a date with so and so, and half an hour in, I realized this guy's just like dad. I don't need that. I know what those people are like. I know what a narcissist is because dad, I learned that up close and personal. So I've seen this in a number of cases over the years. You have to, years go by, and I've had parents come back to me a few times and say, you were right. My kid is it, like they know so much more about how to protect themselves than I ever knew. So it's not always. I kind of cringe when I see parents beating themselves up about it.
Well, every parent does, you know.
Yeah, it's natural.
And the first time they come to me, they are so broken and so torn and so upset. And a huge chunk of that is what they're saying to themselves. Huge chunk of that. And so what you're saying is absolutely right. When you take on, you may leave the abuser, but then you become your own abuser and you begin saying terrible things to yourself. You keep yourself in a holding pattern of pain. So you're absolutely right about that. And you're right about the children too. As long as the children are not alienated, and then their life is really going to be destroyed.
That's true. I mean, that's a whole nother, what do we call it? Kettle of fish. If the problem parent has been successful in alienating the damage there, it can be lifelong. And that's, there are people now, some a few academics, and there's a contingency of people who seem to be saying that there's no such thing as parental alienation, and that's only a claim. That's a defense that an abusive parent throws up. And in my experience, I have seen cases where the abusive parent was also the alienating parent. One person's alienation is another person's protection. The alienating, so-called alienating parent may be protective parent, and
Oh,
sometimes has little of both going on as a
there's a
natural
very,
reaction. You just go like, keep away from him.
right. There's a very,
I've come.
the person that is responsible for all of this going on has a very large organization where she helps people who are going through this, but she says there is no parental alienation.
I
She
see.
has developed, she's gotten millions and millions of dollars from people who buy into this. She's now affecting all the court systems all over the world.
I'm well aware of this. Yeah, if listeners are interested, they can get really good science research-based information from an organization called the Parental Alienation Study Group.
I'm
They
in
don't
that.
advocate PASG. You can find them online.
You're in the
Join it.
PASG too?
What's that?
Are you in? I'm
Oh,
part of
yes.
PASG.
Yes, and I'm in Colorado, and last summer they had a con the annual. It's an international group. They don't advocate for anything. They just are a research group. They're trying to collect and further research into this phenomenon, and
Yes.
it's very fact-based organization, and I highly recommend it to anybody who's interested in this.
Right. It's got all the top researchers and doctors who do this work are part of this group. It really is fantastic. The other one is Elaine Cobb. You know Elaine Cobb and her group? Her group, that parental alienation I can't think of it right offhand. I
I
just
can't
did
think of
it.
it either.
I do. I do. segments for her sometimes. So yes, there's some really good information out there for you. When you're going through this, you feel very much alone. You feel like you're the only person this has ever happened to. And I tell people, this is epidemic. It's epidemic worldwide, right?
I agree. I think at the beginning of my book, I talk about one of the books that I like very much It's Martha Stout. She's a psychology professor at Harvard. She wrote a book called, The Sociopath Next Door. And in her book, she estimated that I think 4% of the U.S. population at that time, this is 2001, I think, were sociopaths. Now, I think that, in my opinion, I think that a sociopath is one flavor, if you will, one of five flavors of emotional predators. It's just anecdotally, I have no statistics to. I don't know how you would compare.
I'm really curious to hear what you said with your statistics.
I believe that it is, as you use the word, and I agree 100%, it's an epidemic in our culture and in the world at large. It's an epidemic. And part of that problem is that the way the paradigm that is sort of the operative paradigm in the mental health professions and in our culture at large is out of date and is catching up now to these kinds of problems. These are, I talk about this in the book. I guess I'll go down this rabbit hole a little bit with you.
Go ahead, sure.
But the operative paradigm and parents, normal people, we bring this to, you know, to all of these situations. The operative paradigm is based out of psychoanalytic, psychodynamic thinking, that theories that originated at the end of the Victorian era. And the Victorian era, you know, what was the zeitgeist? Don't even think about it. Repression. And this created a lot of very extreme neurotic problems. And psychodynamic, psychoanalytic thinking and all of the different, threads from that, forms of that, are very good at, we want to helping people have insight into themselves so that they can then affect change for neurotic problems. But the problems we deal with now are there's still neurotic problems, but the epidemic we're talking about is an entirely different order of business. These are you call them personality disorder problems. And that's not, trying to have insight. If you try to give a person with a personality disorder, you think you give them insight into themselves. First of all, they can't get it in anyway. Second of all, if they do, all you're doing is teaching them about how to cover up better, how to build a better facade. Oh, you saw that I was abusive to that person? Oh, I better close that window. I got to strengthen the facade so that no one will see that anymore. I got to make my abuse a little bit more.
Comment for that. Please. I tell my clients, when you get my book, please don't hand it to your spouse, because I've had clients hand my book to their spouse. They're like, see, you're a narcissist. So,
oh God, it's so normal.
You are, and maybe you can get better. And they hand them the guidebook.
Randy, that is, I'm coming on a chair because I've seen that happen so often. That is such a normal, decent person response. And the fundamental misunderstanding is that that's what you would do if you were dealing with another person similar to you. By that, I mean another neurotic person.
Okay.
And by the way, neurotic people are, one of the jokes, I don't know if it's a joke, but is a neurotic person is busy making themselves miserable. But a personality disordered person is busy making everybody around them miserable.
That's right. Good point.
And, you know, it does kind of circle back to what I touched on much earlier about empathy and what I believe empathy is. I think neurotic people, and if you don't have empathy, you can't have a conscience, a functioning conscience. Neurotic people tend to sometimes, these very decent people that are troubled by all this, they have an excess, if you will, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but they're deeply troubled by how they're said their empathy for, they have empathy for the predator.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
Is it of any use to just very quickly define what I mean by empathy? Because the word gets thrown around a lot.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I want to hear whatever you have to say.
I believe that empathy is an immediate, congruent, emotional reaction to another person's emotional state.
Okay.
So the example I give is a stupid example, but if I'm in a really great mood and I walk into a room where, I don't know, four of my friends are, and a few minutes before I walk in, one of them just got a call telling them that their whole family had been killed in a car crash. And the mood in the room is as hard, deep, and sorrowful as it could be. But I'm all like, yahoo, I just came from whatever, you know, like whatever it is. And I'm feeling great. When I walk into that room, if my empathy is functioning, nobody has to say a word. And I will immediately, my emotional state will adjust. It will become congruent to their emotional state.
Very good point.
That's it. No words, no nothing. I don't have to understand what's going on. I'll just feel it. And that's different from sensitivity to other people's emotions. Emotional predators are highly sensitive. So an emotional predator walk into that room, they pick up on it, but they wouldn't feel the same way. They might even internally feel a little bit elated because they'll go, oh, these people are emotionally upset and vulnerable. How can I use this to my advantage? And then they'll be very good at saying all the right things. But what they're really doing is strategizing, scheming. And it looks the same sometimes, but sensitivity to other people's emotions is not the same as empathy. Empathy is an automatic thing. It's an immediate, automatic, congruent reaction.
That's really a great way to explain it. Have you ever noticed, this is something I really, really want to look into. And you were talking about how the predators have like a sixth or seventh sense, okay? They do have some sort of ability because often they don't even have to be with the person to know what that person is doing. Have you ever noticed that? I hear this a lot. I hear where people are being, they'll be doing something and I'll say, you better check the room for cameras, you better check it, you know, and there's nothing there, but that predator knows what they're doing. I don't understand this, and not everybody explains it to me, but I've heard it about five or six times in the years that I've been doing this work.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. I'm not sure what I would say about that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the level of intuitive understanding that a predator can have can be extraordinary. They can, and sometimes in the love bombing phase, we're completely captivated by that. And we think it's, oh my God, they can see right into my soul. This is my soulmate. But some of them possess a level of, I guess I would call it intuitive understanding. Like I call it a sixth or seventh sense where, sure. And some of them are very, very intelligent. And they can figure out, I know what she's doing. I know what's going on right now. Yeah, I just left the house. I said this, this, and this. Then I walked out the door, and I know exactly what I left behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some of that.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So I'm listening. The dog needs to come back in.
The boss.
Yeah, I know.
Come on. The boss is...
We were just, my husband and I just flew from Florida to California for 2 weeks to babysit my son's cat. So believe me, I understand.
Okay, sorry.
Animals. Okay, needy animals, that's fine. Okay, so you were beginning to talk about something in your book and you were going through some progression where when I interrupted you about, I don't know if you remember where you were. If not, we'll move on and it'll probably come back to you.
Well, I always say these things, they come back eventually if they're important. Exactly. Tomorrow, the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you think well, first of all, I wanted to hear your statistic. You started to say that. What
Oh,
do you think the statistic of predators in
I'm sorry.
global population is?
You know, it's interesting. My anecdotal experience, and it's just, you know, I don't know how
All I'm
you
asking
actually
for.
can, I don't know how you'd compile a statistic about this, you know. Self-report? No. Anyway, I think that easily 20% of in this country of the current population of this country are emotional predators, maybe more. I think
I say 25 modestly.
I think maybe, yeah, I'm trying to be conservative here, but I think it is an epidemic, and it's an epidemic throughout the planet. It's very interesting because a lot of people ask me, you know, are they born nature or nurture? Are they born this way? Or are they raised this way? And, you know, my personal belief is that it's a hardwiring, something people are born with, and nurturing, you know, a nurturing childhood can, you know, kind of direct a predator into more socially normative and acceptable career, like a, you know, you'll be a hard charging chief executive officer, brutal but you know efficient, and society loves you, and moderate the, you know, the more toxic aspects. And if you that same person were brought up in a series of crack dens, you know, they might become a serial killer or a serial rapist, or so there's both play a role. But one thing that interested me when I was writing the book, I read about, I can't remember the source of this, but it was suggested that in a culture like Japan, there's a lower percentage of what I'm going to call, you know, sociopaths. I think that's what they were talking about. And the speculation was because the culture, and I'm out of my league here, but the speculation was that the culture is more oriented toward group responsibility toward the group. Whereas in the United States, for example, the culture is more oriented toward the individual. You know, individual is more important than the group. And the speculation was that that had a ameliorating, I think that's the word, an ameliorating, it tamped down on the noxious effect of people who are born with what I would say a defective empathy circuit.
And there are cultures like Middle East cultures where men are dominant, and it's supported by their culture that they're supposed to be dominant and sometimes even cruel, heartless, cheaters. It's accepted. It's accepted in those societies. When people reach out to me from those countries, it's very, very difficult
Oh
because
my Lord.
you have to leave your culture. You have to leave. Even your own family will not support you trying to get away from a predator like that.
Oh my God.
It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole important piece about to what extent are people like you and I trying to impose our cultural values on another culture where, you know, beating your wife is norm. I mean, what do you mean? Of course I have to beat my wife. I mean, and there are cultures that, you know, and
Yes.
oh God, the honor killings, you know, daddy kills his daughter to preserve the family honor and stuff. Hey, I'll admit maybe I'm culture bound, but I think that's subhuman behavior.
It is.
That's
It's
my
inhumane.
belief.
Inhumane. Okay, so we got to that statistic. We're really on the same page here. I say, probably one out of four people has
Yeah,
something
no, I
like this.
agree. I
And
agree with
I
you.
always sit there like in the airport, and I'm looking around and I'm thinking, if one out of four, how many people sitting in this airport or sitting on the plane I'm in have this? And they're so good at hiding it. They're so good at masking it and fitting into society.
I'm not sure what to say about that because I do the same thing, and it's kind of like, oh, I wish I didn't see it. What it's like once you see, you can't unsee, and you know, it's hard also once you've seen that to not become kind of paranoid in your own way and suspicious of everyone. One of the things I say about that is a lot of good-hearted people extend trust, like sort of automatically. I mean, I need to, my father was like this. You need to, you meet somebody, you assume the best about them. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I meet somebody and I say, the jury is out. They seem very nice. They seem, you know, wonderful person, but we'll see. Or we'll just, I'm not going to extend or grant my trust, if you will, easily. I'm going to wait, or maybe a little bit incrementally, a little bit, and test and see. But it's very, it takes repeated experiences often of someone to really know who and what they're about, and if they are a dangerous person.
Right.
And I mean, that's true of all of us. You know, how do you ever really know anybody as fully as you think you do?
You know, I remember I used to watch Dr. Phil a lot. And
oh, yeah.
One thing that he used to say was that we live in a time where we can't, forget how he put it. We can't assume, gosh, I just drew a blank, but anyway, he said we live in a time where we can't give people the benefit of the doubt. We can't give people the benefit, that's what it is. Can't give people the benefit of the doubt. There was a time when our towns were smaller, when we knew everybody, but we live in a huge world here where everybody has access to everybody. You cannot give people the benefit of the doubt. But for those of us, you know, so many of us were raised with, oh yeah, you just look for the best in people.
Yes. Yes. I say, I mean, to that I say, it's perfectly fine to look for the best in people, but don't assume that the best in them is who they are or whatever. It's real. The first step I say in the five steps of protecting yourself, the first step is you have to recognize these people. And I have a whole chapter on, and isn't that simple? And, you know, trust is, I believe, you know, trust is something that is earned over time, slowly. And again, a manipulative person can be very, very adept at feeding you just what you need to know to get you to trust them a little bit at a time. Scam artists, this is what they do. They're expert at this.
Right.
So, yeah, I had an email this morning from blah, blah, blah law firm. I'm going, what? You know, we're waiting to hear from you. I'm going, what? It's a law firm. Then I stood back and said, oh, I'm supposed to trust because it says it's a law firm? Another scam artist. With what
I got. All day long. All day long.
All day long.
The phone and the emails, all day long. Scam, scam, scam. It's a very scary world. And I, you know, I don't want people to be paranoid, but, you know, once people recognize this, they'll say to me, Randy, I'm getting to the point where I'm seeing narcissists everywhere. And I said, because you probably are.
Right. That's probably true. That's right.
Because we tend to invite these people into our lives. Right? And then once we realize who these people are, we begin to spot them.
Yes. To say that, let's just say 25% of the population in the United States are what I'm going to call emotional predators. Okay. Let's say 25%. That means 75% are not.
Okay.
You know, but as you say, I give the example of, you know, if you have 30 kids in an elementary school classroom and you assume there's two parents, I mean, there's going to be a couple of predators in among the parents there, and you're in the class, you know, the parent teacher meeting or whatever, the classroom meeting, and all the parents are there. You can look around that room, and, you know, statistically, in our, you know,
I get comments, you know, I get comments sometimes on my YouTube. The word narcissist is just a word everybody uses now. Now, this is an issue that I have. That word does not describe the intensity, nor does borderline. Doesn't describe the intensity of what the disorder is. And so people, they say, well, this is a very narcissistic society. The kids are narcissistic. I'm like, no, no, no. This is a personality disorder. This isn't just because they're on social networking 24/7.
This is not about, well, especially kids that go through a normal phase of being very self-focused. It's all about me. That's a normal phase of development. It's also true that, I mean, there's a distinction between what I would call narcissism with a small n, and it's written about, healthy narcissism, which is a healthy regard for self. Mm-hmm. Very important. Mm-hmm. That's very different from capital N narcissistic personality disorder, mm-hmm. which you can look it up. I mean, that's characterized entirely different. Right. And yes, I actually agree that the word narcissist, everybody's a narcissist. Yeah, you're a narcissist. He's a narcissist. They're a narcissist. She's a narcissist. And to some extent, the society does tend to promote, I'll just call it selfishness and a lack of concern for others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it contributes to the overall environment where it's kind of encouraged. And therefore, people who, it's just that contributes to this epidemic, this social epidemic we're seeing, and the politics are so out of control this way. But yeah, it's this is one of the reasons I like to talk about an emotional predator, and I've defined it, you know, mm-hmm. because, and I say they're all narcissistic, but they're all sociopathic, they're all paranoid or hysterical, you know, to some extent, and mm-hmm. and they all have some border, they all have some mixture. It's like ice cream. Yes, they've got these five flavors are all a mixture.
Right. By the way, you say emotional predator, because it's not labeling in a way where people go, you know, that word is way misoverused.
Yes.
Although, since we start talking about that, that's what everybody would be saying. That he's an emotional predator. She's
oh, God, you're absolutely right. And by the way, I've had outrageously off the charts, toxic, emotional predators read my book and then tell me, oh, I had one of them, is great. I'm on a Zoom meeting with one of them, and a lawyer on what's lawyer who was, you know, a nice guy, but, you know, a little, not that clued in, but a nice guy, well-meaning. And the dad who was representing himself, the lawyer's representing mom, and the dad suddenly starts attacking me and saying, oh, now I know why you wrote that book, because you're an emotional predator. That's how you know all about them. And he was off. He would check all the boxes. And so this is the projection, right? Mm-hmm. This is like, okay, I can't see it in myself, but I'm gonna see it in you.
That's absolutely right.
By the way, there's one thing when you mentioned that you have people say to you, now that you've kind of opened my eyes to this, I see narcissists, I see these sociopaths everywhere. Part of what I tell people is being prudent is not being paranoid. There's a difference. And you don't have to become paranoid in order to be, you know, prudent. And also that's about adjusting. Really, I mean, the first step to protecting yourself is you got to identify these people for what they really are. And that's easier said than done sometimes. The second step is you got to know yourself better than they know you. We talked about that. Know what buttons in you, emotional, that they can manipulate you with. The third step is very important. You need to be ready, willing, and able to make adjustments in what I call your core values, or, you know, which create the buttons that they can push, your emotional triggers. You need to be able to make adjustments. It doesn't mean you have to become somebody completely different. It just means that you may, bless your heart, you're a person that, again, we're talking, extends a welcoming trust to everyone. Oh, as Dr. Phil, give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Well, how about you tweak that a little bit and go, I will give people the benefit of the doubt. I will give them my trust after they've earned it. Yes. I mean, that's an adjustment. I'm not saying I'll never trust anyone, because that's the other extreme that's very damaging to people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and the way to do that is to take these things very slow. And one of the ways to identify a predator, if you're out in the dating world, is to tell them, I want to take this very, very slow. Because if you tell a predator that you want to take it slow, they're out the door. They're going in a different direction. They'll say, oh, no, I do too. And then the next day, so you want to see me tonight?
Exactly. Oh, my God. That's exactly right. They will, when you're dating, these people, again, like with their sixth sense, oh my God, you just brought three different things into my head, but okay. Absolutely. You tell them, hey, I want to take it slow. Taking it slow is really good advice in any dating or any kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, the new neighbor who've moved in or whatever it is, a parent at school, someone at your work. But when you say, I want to take it slow, yeah, they'll probably tell you, oh yeah, me too. And then they'll be like the next day, hey, let's get together tonight.
Right.
You know?
Right. and they'll be like, and then maybe they'll wait 2 days and then they'll say, well, how long do you expect me to wait? You know?
Yeah.
I like you. Exactly.
Right. And that's a love bombing thing. Oh my God, I've never met anyone like you. You're so fantastic. I just got to see you again. I mean, I'm going nuts here because you're so great. That's another, yeah, they don't respect, they don't really hear and listen and respect what you've said. Mm-hmm. But I tell people that when you're dating, dating's a great example. People that are dating, they go out on a date, a decent, normal, wonderful person believes that they're having a long dinner with a first date or a second date, whatever. They think that process is about, I'm going to share intimate things about myself and you're going to share intimate things about yourself so that we can develop intimacy and get to know each other.
Right.
And I'm going to let you know who I really am and you're going to let me know who you really are. Well, if you're dealing with an emotional predator, that is not what's happening. You're busy revealing all these things about yourself that are core beliefs, the things that are so emotionally important to you. And the predator is busy mining you for all that information about what you hold near and dear so that they can use it to manipulate you. Might be 6 months down the road, might be a year down the road, might be after they've sucked you into being married. They might be after there's a couple of children and then they've really got you hooked in there, but they're busy. That's what's happening.
They're mining. Totally good different. Word. I like that word. They're mining. Yeah. They customize their abuse to each target.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Based on what you tell them. And most people will tell, you're right. Most people will tell them when they first meet them, they open up.
Yep.
And the narcissist is like, oh, I want to know everything about you.
Yep.
Just like, bleh.
Yep.
You just vomit your whole life out.
Yeah, but who, what normal person isn't like, wow, somebody really interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. So years ago, I worked with a brilliant woman. She's a wonderful lady. She struggled to end a relationship. She had a 12 or 13 year old daughter. She had struggled to end a relationship with somebody that she readily understood and described was just a nutcase, narcissistic, off the charts, all about him. She kept trying to, you know, and she finally set that boundary and ended it with him. Then she went to a weekend, a 2 day weekend workshop on relationships and building healthy relationships. In the middle of the second day, the presenter of this workshop started hitting on her. Well, that's what was happening. She didn't see it that way. He expressed a real interest in her. So they had one date and, you know, whatever. The second date, he invites her up to his house, which is kind of up in the hills where I live here, and had a little land around it and a fence. And he takes her in the house, comes up to his house. He starts, this is what she told me. He starts walking her around the house. Oh, and this will be your daughter's bedroom. Your daughter can have this bedroom. And your dog, see, I have a fenced in yard. He starts moving her into his house on a second date. Now, the wonderful thing about her was she comes back and reports this to me and goes, I'm done with that asshole. Oh, I shouldn't say that, but I'm done with that guy, you know. And so the first one she got was, you know, 6 years of on, off, on, off. That's beautiful progress. And by the way, the epilogue of that is after that, maybe a year later, she's happily married to a really wonderful guy. So
that's a great story. I tell people for the first 3 to 6 months, do not go to their place. Do not bring them. Don't have these. Let me cook dinner for you, because you're going to be in an intimate setting. You're going to end up sleeping with them. And then those hormones are going to kick in and you're going to be addicted. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens.
You get addicted. You are so correct. Oh my God. You're so correct. Yes. Addiction is a big, that's a very interesting. Yeah, it's a whole nother
Oh, it's a lot.
topic.
A lot of this is, you know, is brain chemical addiction, because when people get out of these relationships, when they know they have to for their life, you know, for survival, they still want that person. They're still addicted to the love. And that's what I have to help them break. It's very hard. You know,
yes.
They're black and blue, you know. For 20 years, the spouse has beaten them black and blue, and they know it. They know they're dead if they stay there. And yet I always say, do you still love the person? Yeah, Randy, I'm so embarrassed to say that. But if he walked in the door today, I'd wrap my arms around him and take him back. So it's an addiction as well.
Yes. Oh, God. That raises in my mind that, what do we mean when we say love? I love him. Well, a lot of people, when that comes up, I try to talk to people about, consider that love is not a thing or a feeling. It's a way of acting. How does he act toward you? Is that loving? So he doesn't love you because he treats you, he beats you up all the time, or whatever he's doing could be emotionally beating you up, you know, coercive control. It could be all kinds of stuff. You know, and I, it's hard for some people to say, but I feel, and then you, what you just said, he's like, yeah, but can we understand that as your, you know, brain chemical that's an addictive response, but that's not love. Love is how you act towards someone. And is he loving toward you? The answer is clearly not. Therefore, let's look at someone who's not loving toward you. What's going on there where you're still? And that also goes to, in many relationships, people do not ever relate, or they're not involved. Their relationship is not with the other person. It's with their projections and who they want the other person to be. And a lot of times in that kind of situation, it's really helpful to help someone to see, oh, I would take him back. If he walked in the room, describe the person that you would be taking back. What are their traits and how do they act? Oh, and they'll sort of describe the abuser during the honeymoon, the love bombing phase. And then you have to bring in the reality of, well, okay, that's this. They behave that way towards you. But look at this other stuff. You have to, because we naturally want to blind ourselves to that.
That's when the addiction forms. It forms in the love bombing stage. So when the predator, you know, takes the mask off, a normal person thinks it's their fault when things change. Mm-hmm. So, I use the example. This is the best example I know, because my mother is a narcissist and my father thinks she's a goddess. Okay. He just turned 100. She's 95. They've been married over 75 years.
Wow.
He thinks she is the second coming. He thinks she is this goddess. He's never been able to let go of the first time he met her. He said, when I first met her, I heard bells. He's still holding on to it. And my mother, I believe, really worked him over, because he grew up without a mother. His mother died when he was very young. I think she smelled it on him. I'm going to be that mother. And boy, did she hook him.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. You know, this can go on for years and years. And I tell people, when you get out, stop beating yourself up. Congratulate yourself, because not everybody does. This is hard to break. Very hard to break.
Yes. Yeah, that, by the way, that circles back to the thing I think I'd said earlier about, if you've been targeted and you stop beating yourself up, it almost, in my opinion, it almost assuredly means that you're an exceptionally wonderful person.
Mm-hmm, you're right.
They don't target people that are selfish and are not going to be, you know, they target the best among us.
You're absolutely right. So we have to stop. Gosh, we could go on for hours.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk outside of this, but.
Please.
But yeah, so then tell us what your book's called again, the name of your
book. Oh, it's called, here, I have a, I don't know if they can see it. It's called, let me see it. Does that
Protecting yourself from emotional, you know what?
Yeah, protecting yourself from, whoa, everything's shiny and reflective.
I think I have it on my bookshelf, yeah.
It's called Protecting Yourself from Emotional Predators. And the subtitle down there is Neutralize the Users, Abusers, and Manipulators Hidden, keyword, among us. But yeah, protecting yourself from emotional predators. That's the
okay.
That's awesome. And if somebody wants it, they go to Amazon. There's an audio, there's an Audible version, and there's a Kindle version too. I'm a big paperback guy, but
yeah, you know. I like books too. We're the old people.
Generation.
I want a book in my hand. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I like to write notes in the margin in pencil and, make my own table of contents in some of the blank pages in the front. Page 53, that's when so-and-so did such and such. So I can get in and out to the stuff that's important to me.
With these topics, people do need the physical copy of the book because they will go back and back and back to things and reread them, relate. They'll have another experience. They want to go back and relate to it. So it's really good to have the physical copy. Okay. And so tell us if anybody wants to work with you, tell us exactly what you're doing, because a lot of people are struggling with, parental alienation and very unfair court decisions and things like that. Is that what you do?
Yes. Yes. And I work well with, so my background is, there it is. I'm wearing it today. How about that?
Oh, Cornell.
I've been wearing this for 30 years, but I'm a graduate of Cornell Law School, and I don't practice as a lawyer now. I'm also a psychotherapist, and I have all kinds of psychology and mediation arbitration trainings, but I work very well with people's attorneys also to help kind of bridge, to help the parent dealing with this kind of stuff, help them on the emotional, psychological side of it to understand, to change their view of the whole thing so that they're less reactive. And a lot of the lawyers that reach out to me and say, hey, could you please help this client of mine who's, I understand, they're just bouncing off the walls with what they've been through. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of that kind of consulting with people. And sometimes people who've been divorced for a number of years and they're still dealing. Yeah, I work with a lot of people. Some people who aren't in the family courts. I get contacted by people who are in, businesses with the problem people and conflict within their business. And sometimes mid-sized firms will contact me about, what would normally be called an HR, human resources problem. But I can bring a different understanding to the whole thing and different strategies for how to deal with it.
And so do we contact you through your website?
Yeah, that's a good way. Sure.
And what is that?
That's creativeresolutions.org.
Okay.
Yeah. creativeresolutions.org.
Okay. Well, we'll have to collaborate on some things.
Please.
I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you and I have much, more to talk about.
There's so much more to talk about. So we will. All right. Well, for today, thank you. It's been great. Let me just.
Randy, I just want to say thank you very much. And I really appreciate you and the work you do and the understanding that you bring to all of this. It's so needed. It's so needed across the whole society and for all the people that you can help. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for that. I try to put out as much content and make myself as visible as possible because people need it. Okay, yeah. Have a great day.